From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Naloxone is a prescription medication used to rapidly counter the effects of opioids like morphine and OxyContin to heroin and can save lives from overdose deaths. Florida lawmakers will consider a bill in the coming legislative session to expand the availability of naloxone. Supporters point to the thousands of lives lost each year to opioid drug overdose in Florida, but opponents point to the legal liability concerns and say the bill could encourage prescription drug abuse. We'll take a closer look. Plus, members of the Florida Highwaymen will be featured this weekend at Art Fest Fort Myers. The group of self-taught African-American artists are known for their paintings of iconic Florida landscapes sold along roadsides and door-to-door going back to the 1950s. Now, Highwaymen works are highly sought after by collectors around the world. We'll meet one of the Highwaymen and learn more about this year's Art Fest offerings. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Art Fest Fort Myers returns this weekend for its 15th year. This year's offerings include an exhibition of works by members of the Florida Highwaymen. Beginning in the 1950s, this collective of African-American artists sold their paintings of iconic Florida landscapes along roadsides and door-to-door. Members faced racial and cultural barriers, and at the time, galleries wouldn't show their work. Now, authentic Highwaymen paintings are highly sought after. Later this hour, we'll meet Kelvin Hare, artist and son of the movement's founder, Alfred Hare. That conversation's coming up later this hour. But first, in the coming state legislative session, Florida lawmakers will consider a bill aimed at expanding the use of a drug that can save the lives of people who have overdosed on opioid drugs like morphine, OxyContin, or even heroin. Naloxone is a prescription medication that can rapidly counter the effects of opiates and revive a patient. Under a bill that's yet to be filed by Republican Senator Greg Evers, physicians would have the ability to prescribe naloxone, not just to patients taking opiate medications, but to close loved ones who could administer the drug in the event of an overdose before emergency help arrives and potentially save the person's life. Supporters of this expanded access to naloxone point to Florida's more than 2,000 accidental prescription overdose deaths in 2013. But opponents argue the measure could actually encourage prescription drug abuse and point to potential legal liability issues as well. Joining me now for a closer look at the effort is Kelly Corder, president and CEO of the Skeeter Hawk Experiment. The Jacksonville-based nonprofit is aimed at ending prescription drug misuse and therefore drug overdose deaths. Kelly, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
We're also speaking with Dr. Aaron Wall. He's a physician in the emergency department with Lee Memorial Health System. Thanks for your time today, Dr. Wall.
Well, thank you very much for having me as well.
Kevin Lewis joins us. He's CEO of Salus Care, the Fort Myers-based nonprofit mental health and substance abuse service provider. Kevin Lewis, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here, John. Thanks.
And at some point during our conversation today, Republican Senator Greg Evers, whose district covers portions of the Panhandle, will take some time from his PAC schedule to provide his insights as well. For the time being, listeners can join our conversation, connect with our guests, and tell us what you think about this proposed expansion of availability of naloxone. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Kelly, let's begin with you. Tell us about the scope and mission of the Skeeter Hawk Experiment and how you came up with the unique name for this nonprofit.
Sure. I co-founded the Skeeter Hawk Experiment in the Jacksonville area, as you said, in March of 2013, after learning that more than one individual in my life had been struggling with prescription opiate medications. And our mission is really to reduce prescription drug misuse and related harms through the testing of innovative prevention, treatment, and overdose rescue strategies, and the latter of which really focuses on expanding access to naloxone, the antidote to an opiate overdose. The name comes from a 1977 book written by my great uncle, Will Campbell, called Brother to a Dragonfly. He was a civil rights activist, a preacher, a writer. And the book is his life story, which includes the story of his brother's prescription opiate addiction. And Skeeter Hawk is a kind of southern slang term for dragonfly, because mm-hmm. that's what they eat, mosquitoes. And the beginning of the book opens up with a little experiment with a dragonfly, and hence the name.
Gotcha. And Dr. Wall, let's talk a little bit about the drug naloxone itself. It's been around for some 40 years now, so it's hardly new. Can you explain how exactly the drug works so effectively in reviving overdose victims?
Naloxone is actually remarkably successful. It's very easy to use and works remarkably quickly as well. It's essentially an opioid itself, but with absolutely no abuse potential whatsoever. And it competitively binds to opioid receptors in our central nervous system and essentially knocks off the opioid's effects. And it happens within about 45 seconds to a minute. And completely reverses the profound respiratory depression that occurs with opioid overdose. There's definitely some side effects when we give the drug. The patient usually experiences something akin to an acute withdrawal syndrome. They can get nauseous, have diarrhea episodes and chills, and essentially experience a lot of pain in the absence of the opioid. Which is sort of an interesting point as to, you know, there's a lot of opponents that feel like, oh, we would be encouraging those if they had naloxone available to go ahead and, you know, use it at whim to revive themselves. But it's a very, very unpleasant experience to receive it. And what's interesting is that actually if you give it to somebody without opioids, there's essentially no effect whatsoever. It's virtually inert to patients who are not experiencing an opioid overdose.
So basically, we don't have actual language of a bill to look at, but the basic idea of what we're looking to see proposed in the legislature with this proposed bill would kind of make naloxone available almost the way that, say, an EpiPen would be for someone at risk of a severe allergic reaction.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I mean, an EpiPen is also, though, what's important to understand is that it's also a prescription drug. And as a physician, you know, we're hoping that what's in the bill is civil and liability immunity, as well as criminal liability immunity for those giving the drug, because what's interesting is because it's a prescription drug, our state practice laws generally discourage or prohibit the prescription of drugs to a person other than the intended recipient. And so we call that third-party prescription. That's what a third-party prescription is. And it also discourages if a physician has not personally examined the patient, and that's called a standing order prescription. And so some prescribers are wary even of prescribing naloxone because of those liability concerns. You know, is that in violation of the practice of medicine? And I think that some of those concerns are speculative, but real. And, you know, hopefully if we can help alter legislation or help amend legislation, then I think it's our responsibility as emergency physicians to basically engage legislators and make a bill that helps other physicians adopt this practice.
And currently, can physicians prescribe naloxone to the individual patient, say if they do have a patient who they know is on potentially dangerous opioid painkillers?
There's nothing saying that they cannot.
Is it, you know, done much? Sorry.
Not very much. No. To be very honest with you, anecdotally, in my experience, not really. It's catching on, but I can only speak for, you know, those docs I interact with in Florida. It's obviously done significantly and to great public health benefit in other states. And those programs could be better highlighted by Kelly. She's a fountain of knowledge concerning those programs. But basically, Florida is sort of catching on and, in a sense, catching up.
Well, that brings up a great point, and that is that this bill isn't exactly groundbreaking. This is something that some states already allow. Kelly, is there any kind of data we can point to highlighting the effectiveness of this expanded access to naloxone in states where it is allowed, compared to places like Florida where that hasn't happened?
Well, two things. One, currently in any state, it's certainly legal to prescribe naloxone to a patient at risk. And in fact, we got that reaffirmed when we asked Dr. Reisfeld, a U.S. physician, to petition the Florida Board of Medicine in December that it was within the standard of care for him to prescribe naloxone on a take-home basis to his patients at risk, even acknowledging that a third party, by definition, was going to have to administer it to that patient. And they agreed with that in a unanimous vote. But what Dr. Wall was referring to is about 25 states or so have then passed naloxone access legislation, expanding it to prescriptions to people not at risk. And probably the best study out there is of the Massachusetts program. They have a naloxone distribution program, and they concluded that communities with high implementation of overdose education and naloxone distribution had a nearly 50% lower opiate overdose mortality rate compared to communities that did not implement overdose education and naloxone distribution in that state over the course of a 68-year time period, accounting for community differences. So there has been shown high rates of effectiveness, and probably the Massachusetts is the most well-studied program out there. But again, about half the country has passed these laws, so we're kind of on the second half of the curve here.
And Dr. Wall, I wanted to go back to something you had said earlier about how rapidly naloxone seems to take effect and you really start to see the impact there. Does that have something to do with the way it's administered? Is it administered intravenously in the hospital? And, of course, I would imagine that would be different for a prescription someone has at home.
That's a great point you bring up, because there's some interesting points about how we actually dose it, you know, how it's actually given to the patient, which modality. It works within 45 seconds to a minute, sometimes 2 minutes if it's IV, which is how we usually prescribe it in the hospital. But it works very rapidly, at least within 2 to 3 minutes if you give it intranasally, and that's through an atomizer. That's essentially the same medication in the vial that we inject IV. You can spray through a little device called an atomizer, and it goes intranasally. And then recently a company just came out with an auto-injector, much like an EpiPen. But interestingly enough, it also gives a third party or a lay bystander instructions on how to use the unit, and it's an intramuscular injection. Either way, all three routes, you can also give it subcutaneously, which is just under the skin. But we're looking to get it into the hands of as many people as possible, and the easiest methodology and the cheapest methodology as well to make the program sustainable. But either way, it still takes only about 2 to 3 minutes to work and see the effects of it.
And Kelly, is part of the challenge now that, you know, as Dr. Wall mentioned, he doesn't see a whole lot of physicians really prescribing it for home use, you know, outside of, you know, an emergency hospital setting. Do physicians simply not know that naloxone can be prescribed in this way?
It's certainly an emerging medical practice. This kind of started back in 1996 with the Chicago Recovery Alliance being one of the first community programs actually distributing naloxone to lay people in the form of intramuscular injection kits, actually needle and vial. And over time, it's kind of been an expansion of the continuum of care from preoperative hospital setting, paramedic setting, now into family and friends and home use. And so one of the challenges we've had over the last year is really getting the word out among the Floridian medical community about this option, regardless if legislation passes or not, of the products that are out there that are shown to be effectively used by lay people, get them stocked in pharmacies. So that's one of the big things, is traditionally outpatient pharmacies have not stocked naloxone for a take-home basis and labeled it for layperson use. And so actually coordinating that and spreading awareness about the ability to prescribe it to patients at risk now has certainly been a challenge. But we should see more and more of that practice happening as new products and devices become available, such as the auto-injector, and particularly if legislation passes and brings this issue to the forefront.
We're discussing a legislative proposal state lawmakers may consider in the coming session that would expand availability of naloxone, a drug that can save the lives of people overdosing on opiate drugs. We're talking with Lee Memorial Health System emergency medicine physician Aaron Wall, Kelly Corder with the Skeeter Hawk experiment, and Kevin Lewis with Salus Care. Phone lines are open at 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Dr. Wall, does this proposal have widespread support from the medical community?
I think it actually has, you know, inherently as physicians, you know, we took oaths to save lives. And because it's worked so well in other states and through other programs, I think on the face of it, absolutely, it has widespread support amongst physicians. But again, you know, and I don't mean to sound self-centered, but, you know, there is just a risk of, you know, tort liability or civil liability. And because of that, I think that there hasn't been, you know, rapid acceptance of the practice. And again, I think that some of those fears are somewhat unwarranted and speculative. But and it's hard to say that, you know, anybody would prosecute a physician who was acting in good faith by prescribing this medication. But, you know, there really is issues as far as prescribing to a third party, not being present, seeing the patient. And if we had some flexible laws, you know, that were designed, I think that you would find the acceptance, you know, would be much more rapid amongst physicians. I think there's a lot of eager physicians that want to get involved. I, for one, am one of those, and I just am looking for some more protection. But I'm, you know, in the end, if the legislation isn't there, I would definitely become more involved with some of the projects like Kelly's and investigate doing it on our own.
And I think you've somewhat addressed this in an earlier question, but what about concerns that have come up about this increased access to naloxone encouraging prescription drug abuse? Is that, do you think, a legitimate concern?
No, I, you know, initially, of course, at face value, you would think that as well. But again, you know, I don't mean to use a silly analogy or diminish the severity of what's going on and how opioids can ruin a person's life and the families. But I mean, naloxone has been referred to as garlic to a vampire. I mean, it's a very horrible feeling when you're reversed with naloxone if you're dependent on opioids. And the research that has been present through the last 10 years of this practice throughout the country has proven that that's just simply not true. There is some concerns. It is important to be mentioned that naloxone only lasts about 30 to 45 minutes, maybe 75 minutes in some studies. And so the effect of longer acting opioids, if you give it to a patient and that patient wakes up from their overdose and then refuses further medical care, what can happen is that they can become subdued again from the opioids that are still on board. And, you know, there is some sort of legal aspects to that also may cause a physician to hesitate. But that's an important concern, but probably not one that occurs all that often. But it's also a concern for the third party, sort of the first responders, if they're on the scene and they give the naloxone and the patient, you know, decides that they don't want further medical care. That's an issue, and again, I think legislation can address those kinds of concerns of physicians.
Well, and I think another aspect of that concern is raising awareness that folks who overdose in our state don't all suffer from substance use disorders. If you look at the data nationally at the CDC level, they have concluded that some of the highest risk populations at risk for prescription opiate overdose are actually some 9 million people reporting long-term medical use of opioids, in particular patients who are on high dosage medical use and take extended release long-acted opiate preparations. So one important education point of our organization is to raise awareness that overdose victim epidemiology covers a broad spectrum of our population, and it can occur from the completely illicit use of prescription opiate medications as accidents, and also non-medical use of prescription medicines and heroin, but simply the medical use as well. And we always say within our organization that the body doesn't care about the legality of the drug, and it's part of our message that our public policy laws and physicians shouldn't care either. Every life is worth saving.
And I couldn't agree with Kelly more, and I mean that sincerely. I think it's somewhat of a shame that, you know, the laws that were designed to sort of establish the practice of medicine are basically inhibiting good-hearted physicians that actually want to get involved in these kinds of programs from doing so just because of those legal concerns. I think definitely the life is, and the concern for that person's life is much more important. But those are the realities, and again, my goal and what I'm trying to do is to try and join forces with groups like Kelly's to sort of educate our physicians so that we get broader acceptance and we can get naloxone into the hands of these people to begin saving lives in our state.
Well, let's get the perspective from the side of, you know, substance abuse treatment and recovery. Kevin Lewis with Solace Care, what is your take on this proposal?
I think the proposal at face value is pretty clear. We're having 5 to 6 people die each day in Florida as a result of opiate overdoses, some due to illicit drug usage, some due to addiction, some due to illicit medical usage, as Kelly outlined. And to not have a medical response to that, when you watch the rest of the nation putting naloxone not only in the hand of third parties, but putting it in the hand of EMS, putting it in the hand of law enforcement in recognition of what's happening, in recognition of the amount of death that's occurring due to opiate overdose. So from a healthcare perspective, I think it's really a fairly simple, straightforward notion. As Errol would identify, we have to make sure we protect the providers, and we have to do something that's thoughtful and rise above some of the kind of short-term political issues and say, okay, what are we going to do as a healthcare system? Because some of the individuals that are going to be overdosing do have addictions, and frankly, it's a marker point that may well be the crisis that propels them into treatment and recovery, and that happens often. But if they're dead, that won't really occur. Right. You know, so I think that to not offer this, it's the equivalent of what we've done with AEDs as people suffer cardiac events. Once upon a time, my response if somebody had a cardiac event was to dial 911 and yell help. Today, in many settings, we have an AED on the wall with instructions that I can implement because it's a proven strategy to help extend a person's life so they can get proper medical care.
And I think you've kind of answered my next question, but is that something Solace Care sees regularly, patients whose lives were saved because they were overdosing, naloxone was administered in time, and that might have been their push into treatment?
We will see that intermittently. I wouldn't say frequently at the mm-hmm. present time. Part of that based on the way it's currently utilized. It's not as prevalent, not as available in our communities. I think, you know, one of the hopes is if we pass this type of legislation, it will help offer an opportunity to educate individuals as well. Because if I, as a family member, seek a prescription for naloxone because I want to protect my family member who is an opiate dependent, that may also help me understand that if I have to actually utilize naloxone or Narcan to help sustain their life, that probably can be a catalyst for a person to kind of look at how they can change their lifestyle.
Right. And I wanted to take a minute at, rates of drug overdose deaths. According to the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, overdose deaths around the nation, particularly for opiate drugs, have steadily been increasing for at least the last 15 years, if not more. Meanwhile, here in Florida, we've actually seen a decline in recent years. A CDC report released this past fall found that between 2003 and 2009, drug overdose deaths in Florida increased 61%. But then following the state's efforts to, crack down on doctor shopping, identifying unscrupulous physicians, shutting down pill mills, deaths from overdose of prescription drugs declined more than 23% between 2010 and 2012. I wanted to know, Kevin, if you've seen any kind of impact of that decline from the treatment point of view. Has there been any kind of reduction in need or desire for the services Solace Care provides?
No, I would say there's been a very slight reduction in that arena. And what happened was just the incredible proliferation of prescription drugs has changed. It's not as readily available. However, many of the patients we work with have migrated, if they were opiate dependent, to heroin. And which, is another set of issues for them to deal with, and that And so we've had a slight decrease, but I think part of that's just a reflection of the fact that while demand has oftentimes exceeded capacity, maybe 2 to 3 times as much of the capacity of the treatment system, today it may be down to 1.5 to 2 times the capacity of the treatment system. So it still exceeds capacity of the system of care in our community.
Right, right. Well, that's a good point that you make there, that, you know, as the availability of prescription drugs for, non-legitimate use has become harder to come by and people turn to street drugs like morphine, this is something that could still help. And I should point out the figures that I threw out before were just prescription drugs. They don't include overdose deaths from things like heroin. So a lot of those deaths might not have been actual reductions. The deaths might have just shifted to another drug being the cause.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges of data. And I think, again, we look at the rate of death, and we think that the rate of death, even for prescription drugs, is probably twice as great as the rate of death in our state from homicide. Hmm. And, we get very, very concerned about homicide, obviously, as we all should be. But this is one that kind of goes by us on the radar.
Well, and Kelly, I know you've been in contact with Senator Evers' office. The last time I checked, actually, just before we started the show, I looked at his official Senate page, and I hadn't seen the bill filed yet. Do you have any information regarding when he might plan to introduce the measure?
Yes, we expect to file it this week, and we're very excited about that. And what we plan to see in the bill are provisions that address some of Dr. Wall's concerns about civil liability. That was very important to us as an organization so that we could get prescribers participating in this public health intervention and put lives over those concerns. And also what Kevin was speaking to about encouraging community education, the ability for physicians to collaborate with community organizations, substance abuse treatment centers, on actually holding educational classes for folks on opiate overdose education, recognition, and prevention. It's very important to us as an organization that the community realize that naloxone alone is not going to be the solution to the opiate overdose problem, but it is an important tool that we are failing to utilize. And each time we can prescribe it, dispense it, administer it, we have a critical opportunity to educate and intervene, to link to treatment, and provide the possibility of long-term recovery. And it is one tool in the tool bag that we need to deploy, and certainly the education around it is just as important as the medication itself.
And are the folks at the Skeeter Hawk experiment, working with state representatives, in the other house to basically see if someone will sponsor a companion measure in that chamber?
Yes, we expect that to follow shortly after the Senate bill is filed, yes.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, but thanks so much to Dr. Aaron Wall, Kelly Corder, and Kevin Lewis for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Aaron Wall is a physician in the emergency department with Lee Memorial Health System. Kelly Corder is president and CEO of the Skeeter Hawk Experiment. And Kevin Lewis is CEO of Salus Care in Florida, Southwest Florida, rather, helping local residents with mental health and substance abuse issues. We're taking a short break, but when we return, members of the Florida Highwaymen will exhibit their work in a special exhibition coming to the 15th Art Fest Fort Myers this weekend. At their start, galleries wouldn't showcase these artists' renderings of picturesque Florida landscapes, but today the works are highly sought after. We'll talk with Kelvin Hare, artist and son of the movement's founder. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.